everybody. Welcome to another episode of F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of The Lost World, Jurassic Park by Alex, Lawson.
Hey, Patrick. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm podcasting to you from the bottom of the ocean with my friend James Cameron.
Oh.
He's down here. Even the plankton think he is a douche.
I'm just worried that if something happens to him, it means we will not get Avatar 2 and 3. And I just want the man to remain healthy until Avatar 3 is in the can. And,
ready to go.
And the trilogy has been completed. And then he can do whatever he wants. He can go make movies at the bottom of a trash pile. You are listening to F This Movie, which you can find at fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. You can find us on DVD Verdict Presents at dvdverdictpresents.com. You can find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie, but you have to remember now that if you want to hear all of our shows, including our oldest shows, you have to go to fthismovie.blogspot.com. And as always, you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
The internet is buckling under the weight of our podcasts. It can't even hold us.
It's way
anymore.
Too
That's
many
awesome.
Ways to get a hold of us. But you know, listen, we're all about service. Alex, you have not been on the show in a long time because we did that whole favorite movie series and nobody's been on the show in a long time, basically. But now
well,
you're back.
No one's proposed any subpar Spielberg for us to talk about. This is the second in that installment after Hook.
Nice. So, what will be the third in our trilogy? Are we going to do Crystal Skull? Or
I think we're going to go Always, maybe.
I have still never seen Always.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one
well,
of...
Then, yeah. Yeah, it's...
It might be the only... Oh, you know what? I've never seen Empire of the Sun, either. Those are, I think, the two Spielberg movies I've never seen. Have you in your time away from F This Movie, have you seen anything good?
I have seen some things.
All right.
I saw a little movie this weekend. Don't know if you heard about it. It's called The Hunger Games.
Not ringing a bell. It sounds like fun because it has the word games in it.
Right.
And you know, usually that follows like fun and games. So
they went for something different here.
Okay.
In all seriousness, did you see it this weekend?
You know what? I seriously have not, and I had every intention to.
Because you're one of the only ones. I could not believe. Have you read the number 155 million?
Yeah. I was surprised because it was sort of untested, and I knew that you know kids liked the books and everything, and I knew there was a lot of hype, but you never know how much of that is just sort of manufactured, like they're trying to invent
this
hype.
That was my thought too. Like you know, it's a popular movie, but I mean, I had no idea that it was going to be like that. I should have had a clue because I went to a Saturday morning screening because I wanted to knock out like three movies. And it was like 10 a.m. and packed to the gills
on a
Saturday morning.
Don't you feel like it's a little bit out of control, though? Because now whatever the next thing is, whether it's the next Hunger Games movie or the next hotly anticipated series of young adult novels that have been turned into a movie, like we have to keep topping ourselves. This is how I feel every year at like Black Friday, where it's like stores open at midnight, stores open the week before, all stores are open the week before, but you know what I mean? Where it's like, we have to keep building this frenzy. And I feel like it's just going to get worse. I don't know. I'm happy to see a movie doing well, especially one that by most accounts is pretty good.
Yeah. Well, that'll bring us to my review here.
Yes.
I was disappointed. I thought you would have seen it. I actually saw it based on the fact that somebody from the F This Movie Twitter tweeted that they were at it. I assumed it was you. I guess it was Doug.
It was Doug. Doug saw it Friday night. This is one of those weekends where I did
not have a
chance to get to a movie. Otherwise, we would have been there Friday, you know, night or whatever.
Well, anyway, I saw it for two reasons. One, I thought we could talk about it here and it would be topical and relevant. And then two, it was just kind of hard to ignore anyway. Like I just decided, okay, well, I'm going out to see, like I said, I was going to see a bunch anyway. This will be one of them.
Also, you're a huge Gary Ross fan. And you're like, if this guy can top Seabiscuit, I'm there.
Yeah. And I'm also a fan of movies with awful wig jobs.
This is awful wig jobs in this movie?
A lot of awful wig jobs. That's a cheap shot. I actually did like a lot of the movie, especially about the first hour or so. I'll keep it spoiler free, even though like half of America saw it apparently. For like the first hour or so, it's got this really cool and interesting like throwback sci-fi vibe. You get like a Logan's Run time machine type of thing. Like, you know, like a, this, there's a very distinct sort of like class story being told.
Right, right.
I should also say I have not read the books.
I read the first one.
I don't know how to read.
Okay,
I'm running for office in this fall, and I'm running on a strict no reading platform. No,
I think actually you're going to get a big percentage of the vote.
Political. anyway, so I was pretty cold going in. Like I knew that it was based on a popular young adult series, and it had drawn vague comparisons to Battle Royale, which I like, just in the most basic structure way. But that's about all I had going in. And for the first hour or so, it does a really nice job of not being just like a disposable. It would have been very easy for them to just phone this movie in, because people who love these books would have bought their ticket no matter what, you know, and probably would have gone back a couple of times if you're aiming for a very sort of middle of the road type of audience. But there's a really good sense of, you know, atmosphere, and the performances are all mostly good. There are some third act problems. I have a problem, and again, I'll try and speak sort of vaguely, which makes this sort of a disengaging review. But I have a problem when movies sort of don't follow their own rules. Okay. Especially when the movie is literally about a game that has rules, in this case.
I wonder how many of these issues are from the book, because I read the book last week in anticipation of the movie. I was like, well, I should see what this is going to be. And it took me, I don't know, less than a day to read the book. It reads very quickly. And I had some of these same problems, and I honestly wondered, like, how are they going to deal with this in the movie? Are they going to fix what I think are some of the problems in the book? Or are they just going to stay, you know, slavishly faithful because that's what people want? But I think I know what you're referring to.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're sort of talking past each other because we've consumed different parts of this media monster. but none of the problems that I have were deal breakers. It's a fine way to spend 2 hours and 20 minutes. Goes by very quickly.
Yeah,
I will say also that for a movie that is clear out of the shoot that it's going to be part of a series. There are three books, right?
Yes.
So while you know, like, out of the shoot that this is going to be a three-part thing, really handles the notion of a cliffhanger very awkwardly, because they clearly try to do one.
Okay.
And it's an awkward end note. Anyone who's seen it will kind of know what I'm talking about, I think, although it's been, like, overwhelmingly positive reviews. But overall, I mean, if you happen to miss The Hunger Games like you did, I mean, I would definitely recommend it. It's a really, really good way to ease us into the when we're not quite into the pre-summer season. Although you contended that the John Carter game is really start on that, which I still haven't seen.
We basically are at this point, you know.
Yep.
I mean,
you've said that for years. It's just going to keep creeping back,
right? Because this week is Wrath of the Titans, and then American Pie, which, you know, those movies used to come out in the summer. When those movies came out. So we're pretty much there, honestly. It's just, we're just pretending like the Avengers is the hard launch, but it's happening already.
The one other thing I wanted to say, I saw one other movie, and I'll keep it short.
Okay.
I saw Jeff Who Lives at Home.
Oh, yeah. How is that? I haven't seen that either.
You know, I mean, I'm not prone to hyperbole. I try not to jump off the deep end positively or negatively with things very often. But I can say that Jeff Who Lives at Home is like one of my favorite movies that I've seen in like 3 or 4 years here.
Wow.
Like,
okay.
Really, really interesting. For a movie that is pretty much just about people talking to each other, it's obviously you can even glean that from the trailers. Like, it's a very small sort of story. It has this incredible sense of always like forward motion. It's very difficult to say. A lot of times, you know, those sort of like insightful indie comedies just get very talky and kind of boring. This has a very definite story in mind and sort of is always propelling the action forward. It's very funny. Obviously, everybody who's involved, you know, Ed Helms is great. Jason Segel has done great things consistently for the last, you know, 5 years or so. And just a really, really solid and well-told movie. It has like a really hokey premise. If you were to pitch it in a minute,
yeah,
it would just it's a sort of like parable about how everything is connected and stuff. And that's sort of like a film school 101 pitch. Like, that sounds like something anybody would try to make.
Right.
But it does it in a very sort of not heavy-handed way. The performances are really good. Susan Sarandon plays their mom, and she's understated and sort of playing level different levels of hurt, like below her surface and stuff. She's great at stuff like that. She always has been. It's gotten a very limited opening. If it's anywhere near you, check out Jeff Who Lives at Home. Really, really, really dug it. It'll be on my list at the end of the year, without a doubt.
Right now, it would be number one.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
For at least 2 weeks until American Reunion comes out. It's playing
yourself.
Over by me, and I've been really wanting to see it again. It's been slightly hard to get out to movies lately.
Sure.
I don't know why that is, but hopefully that will pick up in the next couple weeks, and I'll be able to catch up on both The Hunger Games and Jeff
Who
Lives at
Home. Next time I'm on, if you've seen it, I wouldn't mind rehashing again. I would just love to hear your thoughts on it.
I hopefully will have. Since I haven't been to any new movies, I don't think, since last week's podcast when I talked about the new movies I had seen. I've seen some older stuff on DVD or Netflix streaming. I finally caught Columbiana on DVD.
Oh, okay.
Mike, who's on the show, warned me via text, like, Columbiana is garbage. And I should have just said, you're right, and ignored it. But for some reason, I was like, no, I still want to give it a try.
Question?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Was that an unprovoked text from him?
It was. No.
So
I didn't
he felt the need to preemptively just if you were thinking about seeing Columbiana.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think he's got my number. I think he knows me, and I think he's like, I guarantee this dope is going to try and watch this movie. A, because he's been watching all these action movies lately, and B, because of Zoe Saldana, who I'm not technically a fan of, but of course the running joke of my love of Avatar, especially between me and Mike.
You got to check up on those kids, the Avatar.
Exactly.
Ones.
She is a praying mantis. I didn't like the movie at all, and not in the way that I often don't like the Luc Besson scripted/produced action movies, which are usually ridiculous and kind of terrible in the way that, like, From Paris with Love is ridiculous and terrible. Columbiana doesn't even achieve ridiculousness. It's just incredibly boring. It's so boring. It takes, I think, almost a half an hour of, like, flashbacks to her as a kid for us to understand, like, how she grows up to be an assassin. If you've seen the trailer,
I have, and I was a fan of the trailer. I was intrigued by it.
The trailer handles that in 15 seconds. Like, you get a shot of her as a kid, I think. Her parents are murdered, and it's like, she's going to grow up to be an assassin, and then she does. It takes 15 seconds. The movie, that takes a half hour. It's really bad. Don't seek it out, really, even as a curiosity. I saw two movies on Netflix streaming that I'll talk about very quickly. One was called Lucky, which was a movie that I was only aware of through, I think Doug wrote about it a long time ago in one of his Watching Trailers with Doug Collins, because I had never heard of it really before or since. It stars Colin Hanks as a guy who wins the lottery and, wouldn't you know, is also a serial killer. Oh, quirky indie black comedy via, like, 96? Doesn't that sound like, aren't we past this?
He's getting a lot of work as a serial killer, too. He just did an arc on Dexter, didn't
he? Yes, he did.
Yikes.
And, like, that's
his niche. It's good to find your niche.
He's fine in the movie, and, like, Ari Grainer plays the female lead, and I think she's kind of interesting as a female lead and sort of underutilized in a lot of stuff because she tends to do more like kind of character parts. But the movie doesn't even seem particularly interested in its own premise. Like, what would happen if a serial killer won the lottery? Oh, I feel good. It doesn't even care about that. It's, like, not even really about him. It's not good. It feels like a movie that was, you know, held over from 1996.
Does it seem like they work from a premise backwards? We talk about those movies a lot.
Yes,
yeah, I mean, that's
sure.
what it sounds like, just from the way you're sort of selling it here. Yep.
Most definitely. And then the last movie I'll talk about is a documentary called Being Elmo, which is available on Netflix Instant. It's about Kevin Clash, the guy who grew up.
Bees Elmo.
He bees Elmo. He grew up idolizing Jim Henson and the Muppets. More than anything, he wanted to be a puppeteer. And he eventually grows up to take over the character of Elmo, who was like this throwaway character that another guy on Sesame Street was voicing and kind of miserable doing it. Like, I don't know what to do with this puppet. It's horrible. He gives it to Kevin Clash, who gives it sort of that baby voice and gives it the personality and becomes the biggest thing ever in Sesame Street. Not like really a groundbreaking documentary, certainly not going to change your life, but very, very like pleasant and upbeat. And it's just nice to see a movie where like, oh, this guy grows up loving this thing and wanting to do that more than anything. And then he does, not told in the arena of like sports. Like that story, is usually saved for like, I want to be a basketball player. I'm a basketball player. It's not usually told with puppets.
I remember seeing trailers for that, and it actually made a little theatrical run at the Art House Indie Picture House here in Washington, D.C., and I didn't get out to see it. I haven't seen it. But I remember thinking that I was intrigued by that story, but I also didn't – I was like sort of – the reason I played like the sort of wait and see on it and didn't run out to the theater was I was – and I'll ask this of you. I don't know like how much sort of – Because you just described it as sort of pleasant and upbeat. Is there a terrible amount of, like, I don't know, does he meet any sort of, like, resistance in his path to become Elmo? Or it's just sort of, like...
Not really, honestly. I mean, not to spoil anything, it's mostly just, like...
Not that makes or breaks. Sometimes it is just nice to watch things.
Yeah, it's not...
They're documentaries.
It's not really a movie about a guy overcoming obstacles. It's really just, like, he's persistent, he's passionate, he's talented...
Because that's what I like about those sports documentaries you were talking about before. Right. There's always some sort of obstacle, usually. But that's not to throw this thing under the bus.
Right. I mean, I think the obstacle is when he was sort of a kid and up until he sort of found a family with the Jim Henson team, he definitely was sort of out of place in the world because he's, you know, this guy who's obsessed with, like, puppets, and maybe people don't understand that. But no, sure. For the most part, it's like... It's just a movie that suggests it's possible for talent and passion and perseverance to be rewarded, which doesn't happen that often. Let's face it.
No. Yeah. So.
And that's on Netflix streaming. I it's certainly not mandatory viewing. I think if you're a fan of like Jim Henson or Sesame Street or whatever, you'll get more out of it than you would if you could care less about that stuff. But yeah, that's it. So let's
and that'll just about do it for our show. I think this is like only like the 2 dozens time we've made this joke when we're doing this kiddie movie.
Well,
I don't care. I'll go back to the well. I'll
listen,
keep going back.
We've talked before about The Lost World on this show.
Sure,
we've made reference to it. But
we've danced around it. Let's say it. We've danced around
a weeks ago, about a month ago, the end of February, we got a tweet at fthismovie, twitter.com/fthismovie. From Warren Sloan, who tweets under the handle @AlmostEasyCast. Please, 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 F The Lost World Jurassic Park 2. I'm prepared to beg. I mean it. I really will.
All right.
And that was all it took for me to push me over the edge and say, yeah, let's do a show on this GD movie. Because I am not a fan of The Lost World Jurassic Park 2. I believe I have referenced it on this show before. As being my least favorite Steven Spielberg movie.
Oh, now wait a minute.
Steven
Spielberg, like, walking it back already. Yeah,
Steven Spielberg's worst movie.
Okay,
is what I've called it.
Yeah. And yes, you called it.
I
want to make sure. Yeah,
yeah. I maintain that to be true.
Okay.
I thought it would be interesting to talk with you about it. Not only because we've done the Bad Spielberg Movie podcast before when we talked about Hook.
Yes.
But because we have had a brief discussion about the fact that you maybe believe The Lost World Jurassic Park to be better than Jurassic Park 3.
Yes. Well, maybe we should have did a discussion about both of them, because I haven't seen Jurassic Park 3 in a while.
And I haven't either.
I
didn't watch it in preparation for this podcast.
Okay.
Because this isn't going to necessarily be a discussion about Jurassic Park 3.
Right.
But rewatching The Lost World : Jurassic Park, I was amazed that you think it's better than Jurassic Park 3. I am unable to find a moment in this movie that I like. And I like...
You can't find a moment in the movie that you like?
No.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wild. Listen, let me be clear, because I have said all those things. Everything you just said is absolutely 100% true. I have said those things. But I really want to be clear that I, in no way do I think that The Lost World, Jurassic Park, is like one of my favorite movies or particularly like. I don't want to be...
You're basically saying burning is preferable to drowning.
Yeah, okay. Let's go with that. I don't want to frame this as like Alex has to defend The Lost World to Patrick. I really didn't want to get into that kind of discussion because this will be a short podcast and I will cry during that podcast.
Also, because your favorite movie show that we just did, you named Jurassic Park as one of your favorites. So there's all these reasons why you're the guy to talk to about The Lost World, Jurassic Park.
Sure.
Here's where the movie starts being terrible. It's called The Lost World, Jurassic Park.
First of all, there's no colon in the official title card.
The on-screen, it just says The Lost World, and underneath it says Jurassic Park.
It's a subtitle is what it is.
This is an inexcusable bit of marketing nonsense, and I understand Michael Crichton wrote a sequel book basically after the movie Jurassic Park was a huge hit, right? It was like, hey, we should tell another story, write a book, and then we'll make that into a movie. Couldn't they just make it into a movie without the book? No. The book is called The Lost World, and there's already sort of a very famous... science fiction movie,
Doyle.
Yeah, called The Lost World that has dinosaurs in it. And so they couldn't apparently just call it The Lost World, but why not go with The Lost World Jurassic Park 2 or Jurassic Park 2 The Lost World? Because what the hell is The Lost World Jurassic Park? What does this mean?
Can't really defend that. But what I will say, your point is well taken. Like, I, at the risk of sounding like a pretentious douche, for a long time now, studio executives have operated under the premise, I'm not saying that this is true, they have operated under the premise that a big part of the audience to which they market is stupid. Right.
Sure,
I'm not sitting here saying like people are stupid and they need to be told that. I'm saying I don't know where that decision was made in the chain. I'm positive God, it's so weird though, because like I'm positive Steven Spielberg he wouldn't want his movie to be called that. But then again, he's Steven Spielberg. Don't you think he could speak up at some point in the process the way, I'm Steven Spielberg, and I would love it if this was not called this.
Well, I mean, maybe honestly,
maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
We obviously should not debate this for too long. The omission of a Roman numeral 2 was Spielberg's concession. Like, I don't want this to be just a part 2. Because he's never technically directed a part 2, right? All of his sequels in the past, which are basically just the Indiana Jones movies, just have another title. You know, it's not Raiders of the Lost Ark 2.
And they've had Indiana Jones. They've had that hook.
Right. Well, not the first movie, but they went back retroactively added that. Yeah. So maybe he's like, listen, take the 2 out of it. So now we just have The Lost World, Jurassic Park. I was very excited to see The Lost World, Jurassic Park, or just The Lost World, Jurassic Park. Well, exactly right. In 97, when it came out.
Because 4 years after. I mean, you know.
And we all loved Jurassic Park. And it's like, oh, it's another Jurassic Park. And Steven Spielberg is back. And Jeff Goldblum is back. So through a weird series of events, I had secured some tickets. It wasn't necessarily a private screening. It was a weird kind of a special screening. For like a Saturday morning, the weekend that it opened. It had already come.
It was like Memorial Day 97, I think, something like that.
So I knew that Saturday morning I was going to be going to see it, but I was like, I can't wait to see it that long, because I think like maybe the Thursday night before it opened, they started doing late shows like 11 p.m. or something.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll go see it Thursday at 11. And since I know I'll love it, like Jurassic Park, because I saw Jurassic Park a couple times in the theaters, like, I know I'm going to love it. So who cares if I see it Thursday night? I'll go again Saturday morning. I mean, that'll be fine. Yeah. So within 48 hours, I got to see The Lost World, Jurassic Park, twice. And I just was dying inside through the first screening as I was like, oh, I don't like this movie at all. I really am not enjoying myself one bit. And then the whole time with the having the knowledge that, like, oh, and I'm going to have to see this again.
It was hanging over you.
Very soon, I'm going to have to do this again. So that did not help my opinion of The Lost World Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. My opinion has honestly only lessened in subsequent viewings.
Did you see it those two times and then never again and now this time? Or have you watched it in between?
For whatever reason, I've seen the movie probably like five times. And
yeah,
I think
so
it's.
So have I. I try to give it a lot more chances. I think
that's what it is. It's like every few years, I'm like, there's no way that movie is as shitty as I think it is, right? It's Steven Spielberg and it's Jurassic Park 2. I'm just kidding. It's The Lost World, Jurassic Park. And surely it's better than I think it is. So I'll try it again. And I always dislike it. And this time I liked it less than ever before. Even sequences that I was like, No, these sequences aren't that bad. I'm thinking of, like, the velociraptors jumping around in the tall grass.
Yeah.
Or the big T-Rex attack in the dangling RV or whatever. Those set pieces were things that I thought kind of worked inside of this mean-spirited, angry, shitty movie. And watching it this time, I did not think that those things worked at all.
I feel bad. You've sort of preempted what little kernel of a defense I was going to mount, because my whole thing is that those little things, it's the opposite of what you just said.
Yeah.
Is that I fully acknowledge this is a movie made without joy and without enthusiasm. Like, I get it. I get it all. Like, I get that it's hollow. I get that it's unsentimental in all the ways that the first one is not. I get that. Like, I mean, you're talking to a guy who's one of his favorite films of all time is Jurassic Park. I'm on the record.
Yes.
As in, you literally recorded me saying it. So yeah, I get all that, but I still, and again, I've seen this probably half a dozen times too in my life. And those things that you pointed out are like, I really still do dig that three segmented trailer thing hanging off the edge of the cliff. I also really like, humor me. I also enjoy the idea of like that stampede scene. I was even taken by a little moment of humor that I had never caught before in the stampede scene when they first arrive on the island. And that is Roland, the Robert Muldoon proxy, as I call him, played by Pete Postlethwaite, however you pronounce that fine actor's name.
May he rest in peace.
And him I like, by the way, in the movie still. He gives like something resembling a performance.
He's the closest thing to a decent thing in the movie.
Like he seems sort of interested in what's going on because he has a cool fucking role to play. But anyway, there's a part when they're, you know, sort of pursuing all these dinosaurs. He's this big badass game hunter and they've given him this badass monologue to start already. And he sort of like has that moment. And then when he is sort of peeking out of the top of the Jeep when the stampede is going on, you see he has these like laminated pieces of paper with like the species of dinosaurs
on them. Right.
I found that somewhat humorous. I never laughed at that before, but it's clearly a moment made for humor. And I was like, oh, he's this like big balls, badass game hunter. And he has to like be like rifling through this packet of information while he's on the game trail. I thought that was, made me laugh.
Chances are we're going to be spoiling The Lost World. If you've never seen The Lost World, Jurassic Park, go ahead and continue to listen because you probably should never see it. And if we spoil it, that's okay. But if you don't want to have things ruined, go ahead and turn it off and come back after you've seen the movie and I assume been disappointed by it. Even what you're saying about the Pete Postlethwaite, character, yeah. I agree with you that like, oh, he's the closest thing to something that's okay in the movie. His character has, it never pays off in any way. Like,
yeah, he got killed. Like, I understand. Yeah.
he's introduced as this game hunter. He's never really allowed to do anything, which I don't even think is like Spielberg slyly sort of commenting on subverting audience expectations. Every time he goes to, you know, shoot a dinosaur, it's like, oh, Vince Vaughn took all my ammunition. What an asshole. And it's not about like giving the audience blue balls. And then at the end, he's like, nope, I'm going to leave. I've seen enough death. I think that moment probably does work for some people. It does not for me. And I'm not saying I needed him to die. I just needed his character to pay off in any way instead of just like, all right, guys, I'm out of here. This was fun, but not fun.
Now, see, I'll engage you on that a little bit because that does sort of work for me in the sense that the movie's best attempt at a theme, while the theme or whatever of the first one is sort of the failure of science to contain nature.
Right.
Like, whatever.
Right.
I've always thought of, you know, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. I've always thought, and for whatever you want to say, that this movie is a mess and it doesn't, to even say that it has a theme is to insult the notion of themes. I mean, like, I've always thought that it is then, it sort of takes that even further by, like, saying that, you know, for as much as science can't control nature, a corporation certainly can't control science, which is attempting to control nature. I've always had these very... What I'm saying is that there are corporate overtones that don't exist in the first one.
Oh, I disagree. I think that's exactly what the first one's about. That the first one is about the corporatization of science. It's turning science into a theme park.
No, I mean, like, I understand that, but I mean, this is more about, like... I don't know, because the character that, you know, the guy who plays John Hammond's son,
Arliss Howard.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, he is not John Hammond. Like, I mean, like, while John Hammond is a businessman,
yes,
he clearly has a passion for the science aspect of the project.
Yes.
And sort of like, you know, bringing a thrill out of people where, like, the guy, for however, like, cardboard cutout of a character he is, and he really is. I mean, we don't have to even go into that. I mean, he is clearly just obsessed with turning a profit.
Right. And again, I don't think the movie is self-aware enough to realize that guy represents the fucking Lost World Jurassic Park. Like, he's the sellout who's not interested in the magic or wonder of it. He's just interested in recreating something that already existed and to try and make money off of it, right? He is the sequel to Jurassic Park in human form. That's what this movie is. And again, I don't think the movie is self-aware enough to realize that that guy commentary on the movie's own failing.
I wish we could give it that much credit. I don't know. But I mean... Again, I didn't even say that theme that I was describing to you totally even works. I think that is something that was sort of attempted. And isn't that a glowing praise? Something was sort of attempted.
Good job, movie.
Way to sort of attempt.
It goes wrong almost immediately. And I have not read either book, I don't think. Although
I read Jurassic Park. I didn't read The Lost World.
I feel like I started reading Jurassic Park because every time I see that first scene with a very young Camilla Bell doing a British accent, that is a scene from the book Jurassic Park. Book. Yes, yeah. That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which
is a very fast... allow me a one-minute digression. It's a fascinating scene in the book. The book is... This is not F this book. I know why we're here. But I will say, like, that's a fascinating, like, there's a whole part of the book that is like a detective story trying to figure out, like, what bit this little girl. Like, there's a character, like, that is just like the nurse who's working in the clinic who's examining her wounds and stuff. Oh,
I can't believe they got rid of that subplot. So yeah, it seems like this weird addition to the movie. Yes. Where it's like they tried to almost use that as the jumping off point for the entire story. That doesn't work. It's almost in there as like fan service, like, hey, remember Jurassic Park? We'll try and give you some fond memories of that before we shit all
Assuming
over
you read the book, which a lot of people didn't.
Right, for the next 2 hours. And even that is terrible because it's, again, it sort of announces off the bat that, like, we are a much meaner movie than Jurassic Park was, because in Jurassic Park it was all about putting the children in danger, but then having them escape because they're children. And Jurassic Park, or Lost World, right off the bat, puts the children puts the child in danger, and the way that it's cut together with the horrified reactions of the parents, you assume within the first 5 minutes, oh, they just killed a kid. And that was something Jurassic Park would never do. So they're kind of throwing down the gauntlet. And then in the next scene, it's like, she was injured. She'll be fine. Even that, I'm not suggesting, like, The Lost World would have been better if they had killed that kid. Because I understand that I'm starting to get the reputation on this movie for advocating the death of characters.
And certainly not in the first reel. I mean,
no, but I think it makes that moment completely dishonest then, because it certainly makes you think she's dead. Oh my gosh. And then they tell you, oh no, 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 don't worry. She's fine. I just think that's cheap and pointless. And again, the scene has no place in the movie aside from
trying to make you remember
Jurassic Park fondly, and to introduce these little guys who are nasty and bite you so that we understand what happens to Peter Stormare when he turns into a red fountain.
He dies, by the way, for about 5 minutes.
Good Lord.
Does that scene, oh my God. Like, I always remembered that scene as being kind of long. When I watch it this time, I mean, it is, oh man, that is,
and there's allow no, me to digress. And there's not oh even a, and there's not even a twist to it. Again, yeah, we're jumping like all the way now
to the middle slash last
third of the movie.
This, like, is the treatment it deserves, though. We don't have logical pattern deconstruction of the narrative.
There's no, like, twist to that sequence.
No. Oh, man.
And it's not... And so then I would say, like, okay, Steven Spielberg, I'll give you some credit. Maybe all you're trying to illustrate is, like, yeah, the length of time that these little guys, and I wish I knew more about dinosaurs so I would know what to call them, like, will fuck with you, and how they are sort of relentless and they keep coming after you, and they're like bees eventually, where it's just like, eventually there's so many of them that I can't overtake them. They're little, but they're in such strong numbers that I can't get away. But I don't think that necessarily works cinematically to try and illustrate that. Like, look how long this takes for them to eat you. So you keep waiting for them to, you keep waiting for just a little turn on the scene where, like, I don't know what the twist would be, that he finally gets away from these little guys and a bigger one eats him. I'm not suggesting that that's good in any way, but it's like, I didn't see that coming, even though everybody totally
would. It's something
would.
Resembling drama.
Something, like, thank you, yes. It's
No, I got you. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'm with you. Yeah.
It
goes on and on.
But that sequence, I think, is repeated 15 times, and that's The Lost World. Because even the scene that you like with the dangling RV is the same thing. It goes on and on. I think it tries to, again...
Well, I'm at least intrigued by the actual physical nature of that scene. Like, I mean, that's... Like, I'll agree it goes on long, but I think that the... I mean, at least you're combining sort of a horrific death with a daring rescue. This is like one guy who gets, you know...
Right, the one halfway decent character in the entire movie gets eaten, because, again, this movie is so cynical and so dark, and Spielberg's movies kind of took a turn towards that direction, but I definitely think it was sort of post 9/11, where, like, Munich and War of the Worlds and a couple of his movies really are kind of dark, and I think it's for a purpose. I don't think it's just like, oh, Spielberg's in a bad mood in the 2000s, and his movies are going to reflect that. I think his movies are reacting to 9/11. Mm-hmm. Lost World obviously comes out pre-9/11. It's so cynical and so angry, and I don't know where that comes from within him. You know, I floated a theory a couple weeks ago, maybe, where, like, there's two kinds of Spielberg movies that really work. The kind that he has to make.
We talked about this. Yeah.
And the kind that nobody but him could make. And The Lost World falls into neither category. It's just this weird cynical exercise. And that's all I can think of during that whole RV sequence is, like, oh, he's trying to outdo the first T-Rex attack in Jurassic Park. And sometimes it's as, like, base as... What would be better than one T-Rex? Oh, I know, two T-Rexes. Like, hey, good job. Way to think outside the box. I just think if you were to compare those, because that sequence to me has no stakes, has no...
No stakes? They're hanging over the edge of a cliff.
It has no urgency whatsoever. Really watching it this time, I was like, this is just a bunch of people going through the motions of a special effects sequence. I don't even think it's cut together or scored. It might not even be scored because, again, that's what he... I don't remember there being music. Yeah. And again, the first T-Rex attack didn't have music in Jurassic Park, so I have to do that again. It felt like it had no urgency, and like the Peter Stormare sequence, it just goes on and on and on, but not in a way that, like, builds on itself in this crazy, giddy way, the way that, like, the T-Rex fight in the Peter Jackson King Kong goes on and on and on, but it keeps getting more and more, like, ridiculous.
The stakes do get raised.
To a comical degree, and I think the movie is aware of that, you know? But it makes it very entertaining to watch, because it just keeps saying, like, and how can I top this? And this movie doesn't do that. It just... That sequence even just feels like it's absolutely... just going through the motions. I just feel like if you showed the first T-Rex attack in Jurassic Park, you know, side by side or one right after the other with this RV sequence in Lost World, it can't compare to that T-Rex attack.
Oh, well, certainly not. No, certainly not.
Which did so much more with so much less. It was a Jeep. He was chasing a Jeep, you know, this movie is...
Yeah. Well, for a while, he wasn't even chasing a Jeep. He was just checking a Jeep that was just parked in front of the thing. Yeah.
All the noise and commotion and money they spend on this sequence, and which isn't to say that the first one was, you know, cheap, but...
Right, yeah.
Which, by the way, let me jump out of the RV sequence for 1 second.
Sure, no, go for it.
This is the first time I had watched The Lost World on Blu-ray.
Okay.
Because I bought the whole, you know, the Jurassic Park was only available if you bought all three, because Universal is smart. And if you want to have the good one, you got to have these other two shitty ones. And I wanted Jurassic Park, so I bought it. And so I have The Lost World now on Blu-ray. And this was the first time I'd watched it on Blu-ray. And maybe it's just a function of the HD transfer. I feel like many of the effects in The Lost World don't hold up nearly as well as the original Jurassic Park.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I have always contended, and I have not seen a Blu-ray transfer or anything. I just watched it on the DVD that I have. I actually feel like, and this is part of where maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, I'm actually sort of circling back to why I hate Jurassic Park 3 so much. I actually feel like they get worse and worse. Also in Jurassic Park 3, they like noticeably change the design of the raptors. They have like spikes on their heads and like fluorescent color. It's so fucking bad. It's awful. And they like make, well, anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But
let me say something really quick.
I agree with that point.
In defense of Jurassic Park 3.
Okay.
I know for a fact that Jurassic Park 3 had a lower budget. The reason I don't mind it as much in Jurassic Park 3, and I agree the effects are worse, Jurassic Park 3, to me, has always felt sort of like the Roger Corman version of Jurassic Park, where it's like, Jurassic Park is this B-movie done on an A scale, and Jurassic Park 3 is a B-movie done on a B scale, and that, to me, was sort of part of its charm. I'm not suggesting the movie is good, but the reason I like it better than something like The Lost World is, it knows what it is. And it stays true to that. So the lesser special effects in that movie don't bother me the way that they do in Lost World. That's all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point. And the worst special effects aren't my only beef. I don't like that the raptors evolve to a way that they talking to each other. Yeah, no. I mean, we don't have, like, we're going to go point for point here, and it's just going to get tedious. But, like, those two movies suck. Like, let's be, you know, they both do. But we're sort of jumping all around. I wanted to pose to you a bigger question that occurred to me when I was watching The Lost World. And this is kind of a weird question. I'm putting you on the spot, so if you can't think of something, that's fine. I have one answer that I'll maybe answer my own question if you can think of something. But when I was watching The Lost World, and rather when The Lost World was happening to me and my eyes, I started to think about, like, when there's a really big successful movie about sort of the unavoidability of sequels and franchises, that's what immediately leapt to my mind, especially since The Lost World, not only is it directed by Steven Spielberg, who is great, but also based on a book by Michael Crichton, who did the first book, which admittedly sort of manufactured to make a movie, also adapted by David Koepp, who adapted the first one. And it's like, something has gone wrong here.
Right, the band's all back together, but they forgot how to play.
Something has survived, and it wasn't their creativity. Heyo. But I got to thinking about if there was ever a movie, I'm trying to think of a movie that I saw that by all accounts, a sequel should have been forthcoming and never did. The only thing I can think of is a movie like, and I'm talking about a movie that I enjoyed. So yeah. Like a movie that I'm glad that a sequel did not eventually come, even though it did. And it's really hard to think of examples like that. Movies that you would think by like the studio system would demand sequels and then they don't get them and you're kind of happy about it. I think of a movie like Sin City, which is not a perfect movie, but a sequel was sort of in development for a long time. And I thought, oh, for sure they will because it's based on these books and, there's so many other stories to tell and something will happen. But looks like it hasn't gotten off the ground, and maybe it never will. And I'm happy about that. I don't love Sin City. It's a movie that I like a lot. I can't think of, but like when I'm watching The Lost World, even though they probably could have made a better movie, they didn't. But they made this one because people make sequels to things that are successful. It's just a reality. I'm trying to think of examples where that didn't happen. Can you think of something? This is a weird abstract question.
Okay,
but.
Real quick, Robert Rodriguez still says that Sin City 2 is his next movie after his current movie. It's always his next movie.
I know. It's always his next movie.
But as recently as like 2 weeks ago, he said it's the next one after he does, I think, the Machete sequel. Because these are movies that the world needs. The world was like, wait, tell me more about this Machete character. Don't worry.
Oh,
he's going to have two of his own movies. The example that jumped to mind as you were talking about that is Inception, where the studio is no doubt pressuring or asking in the nicest voice Christopher Nolan, hey, do you think maybe there's a sequel in this? And again, Christopher Nolan has enough clout with the studio and has enough, I think, integrity, maybe, I don't know, to say, no, you know, we're not going to do a sequel to Inception. It was sort of a personal movie for me. It was an original movie. That was part of its charm. Once you start sequelizing it, you take away some of what made that movie great.
Sure.
But yeah, it's very upsetting that now it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if a movie should have a sequel or not. If its story is this nice little fully formed closed loop. Hey, yeah. You told it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. We're good. A sequel is inevitable, even to something that isn't even that great, like Machete.
Right. The only other one that I thought of that was really great that I thought for sure would get a sequel and didn't, and I promise we'll get back on point here, I just kind of wanted to give us a breather from jumping all over The Lost World, is The Incredibles.
Oh, yeah. Which they're still... Brad Bird never does an interview without being asked about, like, are you going to do another Incredibles? Like... Why not just let Brad Bird make other movies and let's go see those and like those? Stop it! What the fucking?
No, yeah, and that's fine. If that holds up, that's great. I mean, we live in a world where Cars 2 got made, and that's fine.
What happens when we reach a saturation point where literally every movie in a theater is a sequel to something else? Because then we have a finite number of movies that can ever be made, because now there are no more original movies. So now we're just getting sequels to the movies that already exist. So there are a lot of movies that already exist, but this is it. These are the ones. And from now on, it's just sequels to these because we have to have some sort of name recognition.
You are talking about a kind of singularity that scares me. And I think we should go back to talking.
This is the path we're on because of movies like The Lost World, Jurassic Park. To me, more than any other movie, I mean, I think, you know, Spielberg fucked up Hook, and I think he knows that. He fucked up Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, but I think he knows that. And has even sort of admitted in recent months, like, yeah, that was, I kind of did that for George Lucas.
Right. Yeah.
So let's not any of us be surprised that it wasn't any good. I directed the story he came up with, and he's not particularly good at that.
Did you read that AV Club thing? Is that what you're thinking of? I read that in the AV, or maybe they linked to something else.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Jurassic Park, or The Lost World: Jurassic Park, to me is the one movie in his entire filmography that he seems not bitter. He seems to resent having to make it. He seems angry about making it. And I don't suggest that he tanked it on purpose and made a shitty movie as like a fuck you to audiences. But I think the fact that his heart is not in it one bit comes through in every frame of that movie. And I think it's a disaster, conceptually speaking, because again, the notion is what? Oh, there's a second island also with dinosaurs. Like, that's his original, and this may go back to Michael Crichton, I don't know. But, like, the best idea you could come up with for a sequel to Jurassic Park is, oh, second island, more dinosaurs.
That's, no fences.
That is utter garbage. Then, you place as your hero, Dr. Ian Malcolm, who's a very likable and charming part of Jurassic Park, but doesn't belong as your hero. I sort of like, he's the guy who needs to be off on the side, sort of ironically commenting on the action and perhaps getting a moment or two where he grabs the flashlight and waves it. A little bit of heroism, a self-sacrifice from a character we didn't expect. And he's a great supporting character. He's not the lead. And I liken it to last summer when Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, is that the one?
Sure. They're all fourth, kind of running together.
Rob Marshall one, everyone sort of pointed to, hey, Jack Sparrow's a great character. He's not the lead. He needs to be like second banana. He's the guy who's standing off on the side commenting on everything. Ian Malcolm is the Jack Sparrow of Jurassic Park movies. He should not be at the center.
Now I did not do, perhaps I did not do my fair amount of research for this. I seem to remember, though, some sort of like negotiation fallout with Sam Neill.
Okay.
I think I remember reading about that. I could be wrong, and I would love for one of the listeners to maybe call bullshit on that. I think I remember that.
But wouldn't that mean that is Dr. Grant the hero of The Lost World, the book?
That's what I'm saying. I never read the book, and I'm not certain
about it. See, I think Ian Malcolm is the hero of the book.
Oh, he is?
Now, that doesn't mean that they didn't negotiate with Sam Neill, find out that he wasn't going to return, and then told Crichton, he's not coming back, so don't write him into your... I'm serious. I mean, it's this
no,
movie...
No, I know. When the whole thing is manufactured,
it's fucking reverse engineered, right, in that way, that, like, maybe that was what happened. I don't know, but I want to say that Ian Malcolm was always the hero.
Yeah, and it's I'm glad you've raised that point, because this is another thing I wanted to talk about. That's a weird choice, to say the least. But I actually do. While he does not work as a leading man, because he is just this kind of fucking kooky weird guy.
Right.
I actually do have a lot of respect. I actually do have something resembling respect for his. For Jeff Goldblum's performance, and I'll tell you why. There are, like, he does happen to have some moments of, like, that Ian Malcolm snark that we all like, that we all liked, you know. But I also sort of appreciate, even from the first moment you see him, that the experience has changed him. And he's very, he's a much darker guy and, like, very sort of brooding and angry, but also still sort of like channels his weirdo like beatnik humor through that prism. I'm probably giving it a little too much credit.
I think you might be. I honestly didn't read that he was darker or angrier at all. I thought
he shows up
in the black leather jacket, and that's exactly the way we left him, and we remember him. He has one moment that I like when John Hammond is trying to convince him to go back to the island, a scene I have to call just incredible bullshit on, because it just makes no sense. That's how he finds out his girlfriend is already there. I mean, it's such nonsense. He has a daughter. I mean, I know that's the thing that always gets pointed to.
I'm glad that we didn't leap to that, because it is weird.
It's terrible, but that is not. That's not the problem, and I've been guilty of that too. I make jokes about Jurassic Park didn't have enough black girls doing gymnastics, but like. That people always point to that as though, like the way they point to like Sofia Coppola in The Godfather 3, like that's what's wrong with that movie.
Yeah,
no, it isn't.
No, no, no.
That's a symptom. That's not the problem. Because that character makes no sense. Giving him a random daughter that we've never heard about makes no sense. Having her sneak on and say, I wanted to come with you. Makes no sense. No character motivations make any goddamn sense in this movie at all. Vince Vaughn is a worthless character. Actually,
by the way, it's let me interject. It's fascinating to watch Vince Vaughn in this movie. And by fascinating, I don't mean like interesting or he's good or something or his character is interesting. I mean like Vince Vaughn as Vince Vaughn, the movie star. It's really interesting to watch him because he is post Swingers. Like this guy is like the next cool guy,
right.
But not yet. Like I have my career comedy renaissance in Old School. And he's kind of just like drifting. It's so fucking weird.
The movie completely swallows him up.
And, it's weird.
It's because, you know, he really has no character to play at all.
Right.
The only things he does are damaging. And he's supposed to be one of our heroes, but he's the guy who, like, sets dinosaurs free and pulls out Postlethwaite's bullets so that more people can be killed by a dinosaur that Postlethwaite could have put down.
Yeah.
I know that from what I know about Spielberg, he does kind of side with the bleeding heart liberals. So it's weird that, like, in this movie, the bleeding heart liberal is such a shitty character who stands in the way of all of the other characters.
Yeah.
The one moment I like that Goldblum has is he's talking to Hammond, and Hammond does the whole pitch about go back, and none of this makes any sense. And he has a delivery where he says, like, John, no, of course. Like, the way he says no, of course, is great.
I like that you've printed out three words in the movie that you like.
Because it's only – I feel like only Goldblum could nail that. The way he says no is just like, did you think I was going to say anything else?
Oh, that is
good. So listen, I started out saying there was not one thing in the movie that I liked.
You didn't like.
I found one thing, Jeff Goldblum saying no, of course. Maybe not it's even, of course no. I don't know. It might be of course no.
Well, but the point is it's not the normal phrase a person would say of course not. Of course no.
And then he launches into it like, and I'll tell you why. So we talked about Vince Vaughn, who, again, Doug and I did a show on Swingers a couple weeks ago. We talked about, Vince Vaughn pops as a movie star in this movie. And then he gets put into an actual blockbuster movie.
It's such an interesting mark in his career trajectory.
Yeah.
Like, and you go from, like, Rudy to Swingers to there was stuff in between. Like, I'm joking, like, you know, but, like, to something like this, to then Old School sort of is the jumping off point for what we know Vince Vaughn to be now.
And he hasn't done really another movie like this, which isn't to say he hasn't done other studio movies, but he's never done another kind of big special effects, kind of this kind of a movie. I don't think, unless you count the remake of Psycho. Maybe he had a terrible experience. Maybe he realized that he failed to resonate. You know who else is not good in this movie? Julianne Moore. And
you have a lot of good people giving weird, bad performances.
Right,
in this movie.
Because nobody has given anything to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, like, hey, the dinosaurs are
the stars.
They're the stars. They're the attraction, right? But again, you have the version of this movie that works. It's called Jurassic Park. It's not as though nobody ever got this right. As you pointed out, these same people got this right before.
Yeah, same creative team.
The dinosaurs were the star of Jurassic Park, and yet you still had room for some interesting, colorful performances from Sam Neill and Laura Dern and Samuel Jackson. I mean, people remember Samuel Jackson as the guy at the computer better than they do any single character in The Lost World. Any character. I don't know anyone's name. I couldn't tell you anything about their personalities except Vince Vaughn is a pain in the ass and Julianne Moore has red hair. And this movie came out the same year as Boogie Nights, which again is sort of the breaking point, I think, for Julianne Moore's career. She gets the Oscar nomination. People are like, oh, she is very talented. What was she doing in all these shitty movies before this came out?
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you have this cast that if somebody told me, you know, in 2012, like, that these people were in a movie together, I might be interested in seeing it. But no one is given anything to do at all.
Yes, it's very odd. I also feel like we kind of have to talk about like the worst of the worst, which is just even I, as a person who tries, who I have always tried to see the good in this movie that I, for some reason, keep coming back to. I mean, and to your point about it being mean and you know, sort of, you know, mean-spirited and, you know, all this stuff. All that stuff, when it gets to San Diego, I mean, do we need, I mean, that is...
Well, here's, I mean...
Again, something that is, whatever, when we were talking about before, like, well, when you were talking about Lucky, that is clearly something that was, whether it was, I mean, I'm sure it was in the book, but I'm saying even in, even at its presence in the book is certainly just reeks of like a working backwards thing. You're just like, well, this must culminate with a dinosaur in America. Like it is an eventuality that none of us can escape.
Which, and listen, had they gone this route for all of Jurassic Park 2 or The Lost World : Jurassic Park,
sure,
I don't think it would have been a good movie necessarily, but it would sort of justify its own existence, because if you're going to do a sequel, you have to sort of try and think of, well, what would be a little bit different? Hey, in Jurassic Park, they go to this island where there are dinosaurs. How about in Jurassic Park 2, the dinosaurs come to us? I'm not suggesting that's a good movie or a movie that I really want to see, but at least it's something different. Instead, they go with, there's another island, more dinosaurs.
And then they shoehorn in the, well, right, they also come to us, which, we bring them there.
Right, which, and every time I've seen this movie, from the very first time I saw it, but I was thinking about it, especially this time, I looked at the counter on the Blu-ray player at about an hour and 43 minutes when the movie should be wrapping up. They get off the island, which, let me go, remind me to go back to that. They're rescued, you know, they get in the helicopters and they're getting off the island. And I looked and I remembered, like, okay, we're at an hour and 43. The movie should be over, but now we have the shittiest. We still have 20 more minutes of total, total shit garbage. Yeah, I hate those 20 minutes more than anything else in the movie.
Like, he eats the kid's dog.
No, that's funny. That's, like, I mean, that's funny.
It's a coda back 28, the goat, I guess is what they're going for, but that's,
I don't
not
know,
even
it's
close.
Just,
I mean,
again,
I don't know.
People try and suggest, you know, oh, The Lost World is darker. Like, no, it's not darker. It's shittier. It's more violent. I guess maybe somebody's complaint about the original Jurassic Park is not enough people die. So in The Lost World, a ton of people get eaten by dinosaurs.
A ton of people, to your point, like you said, who nobody knows or cares about. Like, right. I mean, like that's the benefit from a storytelling standpoint, I guess, of having these like nameless, faceless, in-gen bad, like toughs come to the island.
Because, to get eaten, like, by monsters, but they deserve it because they're working for the corporation.
Like, right. Oh, yeah. It's just this totally weird dynamic that makes no sense. You know what else makes no sense? The way most everything about this.
The guy with long hair who's like, ah, a snake. And that's scarier than the dinosaur that's trying to eat me. Every moment is insulting to our intelligence, where it's like, I'm hiding from this dinosaur. It's literally, its teeth are coming at me right now. Ah, there's a snake in my shirt. Help, help, help. And then he gets eaten by the dinosaur. Ha ha, fuck you, guy. That's what you get. Every moment is insulting to our intelligence.
Yeah, another one that's insulting to our intelligence. And now we're just kind of cherry picking things we don't like. And why not? And why not? We're an hour-ish. We're more than an hour in.
Yeah.
The boat that the Rex is taken on to get to the mainland.
Yeah.
Like, they, you know, it crashes headlong into the pier, which I guess is cool. But then the reason you find out that is because, like, the dinosaur ate the cat. It makes no sense.
He broke himself out and then ate everyone. And then was steering.
With the guy's hand on the wheel.
Right. He was steering the boat, but, you know, it was his first time, so yeah, it was a bit of a bumpy landing, okay?
Cut
the dinosaur some slack. He has those absolutely tiny arms. No, it's completely insulting.
Like, he decimates the whole crew of the boat,
right,
essentially,
right,
and then is still back in his undercarriage.
Right.
It makes zero sense.
No, absolutely not. Arliss Howard is a complete garbage villain. And again, that's the one thing that maybe you could get right in this movie, is like, you could have this terrible movie, but I guess if you're going to go so far over the top, at least have a bad guy who's over the top. And I'm not suggesting, you know, he should have camped it up, but like, at least it would have given the movie a little bit of life
Well, that's what I like a lot about Jurassic Park is that the villain is Dennis Nedry, who's played by Wayne Knight. And I love the idea of a villain in that kind of movie. If there has to be a human villain who's not a dinosaur, I like it to be like this, like, chubby, angry employee.
But who also is, like, very aware of his own role as the villain and having all kinds of fun with it. You know, like, this is fun. Yeah. I'm the bad guy. Ha ha ha. And meets sort of a fitting end. Just everything. Arliss Howard is just a wet blanket of a human being. There was one more thing that I wanted to complain about with The Lost World, and I forgot what it was, so I guess it doesn't matter. Just that I guess I don't even understand to go back. Again, Jurassic Park had sort of not a particularly innovative structure, but it was like the two parties are separated.
Yeah.
Dr. Grant has to get back to the base or whatever with the two kids, and that's basically the thrust
that's what
of
drives
the right. That's the stuff. It's them trying to get back home. You know, it's not home, but you know what I mean. What the hell? I don't know where anyone is trying to go in The Lost World. It's like they don't have a goal in mind. I understand they're trying to get away from the dinosaurs, but without knowing what they're trying to go towards, it doesn't work. It's just a lot of running around an island, and then every once in a while a dinosaur pops up and eats people.
Yeah, I mean, there's just sort of this anonymous communication hub that they have to go to get off. And it's not even, if the intricate details of The Lost World sort of elude me, it actually is really confusing to me what's happening at all. Like, I get that they're rounding up the animals to bring them back to the zoo part
right,
of it.
Right.
That will be in San Diego. But, like, I don't understand. Like, Richard Schiff sees them flying in and then says, Hammond said two teams, there must, like, they would be one, and then something else was going to happen. But then they say they weren't supposed to show up till later. Like, they knew they were going to come. It's so...
I've seen the movie.
It's so up in the... Yeah, no, I've
and
seen
that's the thing. I've seen
too.
It, like, five times.
And I'm a pretty smart guy. I don't know.
I'm a dummy, but I can usually follow movies, and I just have to believe that it's neither of us have ever
taken... Wanted to care.
Yeah, like, neither of us have ever taken the time to say, okay, what's actually happening in this movie? Because it loses me in the first 10 minutes. And then I just sit there and, like, watch as dinosaurs attack. But I have never tried to figure out the actual story of The Lost World. And I understand that, you know, shame on me. That's certainly a failing on my part. But I do also believe that the movie has some plays a part in that. That the movie never makes it worth caring or trying to understand.
Yeah. Well, since we're nearing the end here, I feel at least obligated to say that even though I don't think it's his worst movie, where I should say it ranks, and I will tell you that it's third. So, I mean, it's
from
one
the
of
top,
his worst.
Third from the top. You are taking a
third
bold
from the top. Yeah.
Stance here at the end of this podcast. What are the two? Okay, so this is his third worst movie.
Third worst movie.
What
I think his worst?
Yeah.
I think his worst is Hook.
Okay.
The merits of which we have.
Yeah.
Talked about at length. We should maybe include a link or something when we post this as a helpful little addendum. And then Always, which I said, which you haven't seen.
Okay.
But I would welcome some, you know, in the comments section of this or on Facebook or something. I would love to see. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Oh, no, wait a minute. No. It's fourth because I also think Crystal Skull is worse than this.
You think Crystal Skull is worse than this too?
Yeah. I think so.
I think it's neck and neck. I hate Hook. I'm on record as hating Hook, but I have to give Hook just the slightest edge over at least this and Crystal Skull because I believe his intentions with Hook were good. I think he started out from a place of...
Yeah, but we could go around and around forever on that. I mean, I'm just trying to evaluate like what we got out of the... Because I agree with you, yeah. I mean, we talked on the podcast about how the ambitions of, and like the idea was very interesting. But I'm just, if I'm left to debate what I'm looking at, I will have this contempt for Hook deep within my DNA for the rest of my days.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan at all. I, I have not seen Kingdom of the Crystal Skull really since opening day. If I watched it again, maybe I would revise my opinion. It's probably, you know, at least as bad as The Lost World. It might be worse.
Sure, yeah.
But I don't know. I really, this movie breaks my heart in so many ways. I really don't like it.
Well, that's as good a place as any to...
Well, that was fun. We haven't done a movie that we dislike in a long time. It's been a love fest for too long on this show.
Too long. Got to keep everybody honest, especially those stuff shirts like Steven Spielberg. Have we done any other Steven Spielberg movies that are good? I can't think of anything. There's been a lot of shows. So
yeah, Minority Report. Which I find to be a mixed bag nowadays.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
That might be it.
Well, then it's good at the very least. We're sort of knocking him down a peg or two.
Yeah, now, right. One of these days we'll get to a Spielberg movie that we like. So thank you.
We do like Steven Spielberg.
Absolutely. Right. Well, we just said, you know, he's got these movies that are kind of bad, but the rest are, you know, varying degrees of good. Thank you guys for listening. Yeah, in the comments section, I would suggest people nominate their... what they believe to be Spielberg's worst movie. And you know we're going to get answers that are going to make your head explode.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, I didn't even... Some Amistad, maybe, or something. I don't know. But,
I don't feel passionately enough to defend. But you're going to get something...
I don't think I've seen it, but once.
We're going to get something that, like, what? No, that's... like, War of the Worlds. Like, that's definitely not his worst movie. Anyway, so write that, fthismovie.blogspot.com, in case you don't know what our website is. And thanks, Alex.
Thank you for having me. Hope to come back again very soon.
Yes. Do you want to take us out?
Yes, I do. I want to tell you all that Mommy is very angry.